Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, we discuss some of the more famous people that went on to become football officials, and some pretty darn good ones at that. Their stories and the games they worked on are really some great football history that I think you'll enjoy. That's all coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal to positive football history. And my friends, as I've told you time and time again, it's no mystery, but I was once a high school football official. I did it for 27 years. I loved every minute of it, and it was such a great experience to be associated with the game that I love. And it, I carry on my passion today, replacing my officiating by doing this podcast with you each and every day, and you know, writing the blog posts and carrying on Pigskin Dispatch in the many medium sources that it is in. And, you know, I want to go back and honor some of these great zebras. Well, they weren't always wearing stripes, as we have told you in some other episodes. But some of these great officials were once great players or maybe famous in some other realm prior to being an official. And I wanted to pay a little bit of homage and respect to them and tell their stories to preserve football history. So it's that third team on the football field that does not often get the credit that they deserve, the officials. And you know, sure, they have a job that often makes them the bad guys on the field, and as calls that they make sometimes create a level playing field. It may go against your favorite team or my favorite team, and we may not be super popular in, you know, our opinion of them, but they have a job to do, and they work big games so that we can have big games. And some of them were famous before they became officials and played in those big games. So here's a few of their stories. You know, and it's common in early football during the 19th century that opposing teams needed to have an official on the field. You know, and back then it was basically the referee, and you'd have two judges, you know, at times, where later it evolved into, you know, a referee and an umpire. We've talked about this quite a bit in our Football History Rewind series, and make sure you go back and check that out if you're unfamiliar. But, you know, what would happen is, to get an official, they needed to have a neutral party. So a lot of times you would have to go and grab somebody that knew football. It would be impartial to the game, so they would grab a former captain of one of their rivals, not the team that they were playing. Now, for instance, maybe if you were having a Pennsylvania University of Pennsylvania versus Harvard game, you would get somebody from Princeton that was maybe no longer a player but was a former captain. Very common to do. Now, author and historian Park H. Davis, in his 1911 book, Football, the American Intercollegiate Game, lists many instances where the stars of the era, such as Yale's Pa Corbin, Princeton's Alex Moffat, C.M. Hollister of Penn, or Herbert Allward of Harvard, would participate as the referee of contests. And there are countless other accounts as well of former big-name players acting as a head official for games. Now, one of them is kind of an interesting one. Matthew McClung is an interesting figure in early football officiating. McClung participated playing the game at Lehigh University playing both football and on the baseball team, and he served as a captain on the gridiron squad in 1892 and is credited with turning it into one of the school's best ever football squads. McClung graduated from Lehigh in 1893 with a couple of degrees geared towards the mining industry and metallurgy, and after graduation, McClung accepted a position as the head football coach for the Naval Academy football team. He served in this capacity for just one season, leading the team to a 5-2 record. And McClung switched gears the following season as he began a career as a college football referee, which would span about 12 years. Matthew actually began officiating football as early as November 1895 when he partnered with Paul J. Dashiell to officiate a game between Yale and Princeton. The two had met before, as Dashiell played college football at Johns Hopkins University and later at Lehigh, and in 1893 assisted Josh Hartwell in coaching the football at Navy just a year prior to McClung's year with the midshipmen. Now, the pairing with Dashiell as the ref-ump tandem quickly became a regular thing, with McClung acting as a referee, Dashiell as the umpire. In a Wikipedia article, it states that former Princeton guard William Big Bill Edwards stated that, within my recollection, quote, for many years the two most prominent as well as most efficient officials whose names were always coupled were McClung referee and Dashiell umpire. No two better officials ever worked together, and there is such a much necessity for teamwork in officiating as there is in playing. Edwards' opinion, end quote, was often shared by sports writers and fellow players. After the Yale-Princeton game, a writer from the New York Tribune stated that Dashiell and McClung were, quote, excellent at their jobs, and, quote, that their rulings were just and impartial as admitted everywhere, unquote. You know, so it goes to show you, you know, teamwork is very important in an officiating crew, whether it's a two-man crew as those two worked back in, you know, the early part of football, or the seven-man crews that the NFL uses today. You have to work as a team, and you're on the same side, and you're trying to make a fair and impartial level playing field. Now, this pairing of McClung and Dashiell was widely respected, quite often as they were the names of choice to officiate the traditionally biggest games of that era, such as many Harvard-Yale games, a couple of Penn-Harvard games, and a Cornell-Penn game. In 1900, they were even summoned to the West Coast for the big Cal versus Stanford contest that year. The San Francisco Call newspaper even referred to the duel as the, quote, two most expert officials in America, unquote. And it's quite an honor to be beckoned west some 2,000 miles, but it does not appear that they ever made that trip, and that game had to get some other officials, but that would be quite costly to get them to go. You probably had to go by train and probably take a week to get there, and you know, probably at that time they couldn't afford to do that. Another official that was famous was Walter Eckersall. Now, we've talked about him before. He was a star on some of Amos Alonzo Stagg's University of Chicago Maroons teams. He was quite a good player, too, before that. Eckersall led Hyde Park High School at Chicago to an undefeated season, and many recognize that Scholastic team as the unofficial national high school football champion in 1903. Walter later guided Stagg's Maroons to the 1905 national championship in college. And he was so good that a young fellow by the name of Newt Rockne idolized Eckersall to the point that it got Rockne interested in participating in the game of football as a youngster. According to an article on a fifthdowncfb.com, Rockne stated, quote, the first time I learned a football was not only something to kick, but something to think with, was when I saw a great football player in action for the first time, unquote. He's talking about Eckersall. Now, the NationalFootballFoundation.com shares that a story of these two meeting up a few seasons later after Rockne became the head coach at Notre Dame. When coach had discovered Eckersall was slated to officiate one of the team's games in Chicago, he was pretty much stoked. The FootballFoundation.org story goes on to say that Rockne said, I've been waiting years for this, to Eckersall. And for what? Eckersall responded. To shake your hand, said Rockne, blurted out quickly, and to relay his memories of that high school all-star game so many years before that he had watched. You know, and Eckersall responded, no, stop, stop. and where Notre Dame will be penalized 5 yards for speech making. Now, that's a great quote there, great story. Now, Rockne loved to retell that story to anyone who would listen, and many claim that the press that Eckersall received as a player back in, you know, 1906, I believe, 1905, the ones that Rockne so much enjoyed as a youngster, helped Newt later in life realize the importance of getting good press for a football program. And he was probably one of the earliest and best to do it, getting some media attention for Notre Dame. Now, Eckersall was so well respected as an official that he was selected to be the Athletic Official Association's first president in 1917. And besides being one of the founders of the AOA, he was an outstanding official too. He worked as a referee for the 1916 Rose Bowl game. Eckersall also presided over the epic 1927 contest between the Titans, Notre Dame, and Southern Cal, played at Soldier Field before an estimated 120,000 fans. He is forever noted as one of the game's most respected game officials, and not only is he an AOA Hall of Famer as a ref, but he is also recognized by the College Football Hall of Fame as a player too, because he was brilliant. And there's a stadium that still stands and still is used, from what I'm told, in the south side of Chicago that still bears his name of Walter Eckersall to this day, Eckersall Field. Now, we had another official. The University of Michigan had a halfback quarterback in 1913 named Tommy Hewitt. Hewitt would go on into coaching after leaving Michigan, and he served in the position of head coach at the University of Maine in 1915 and 1916, leading the school to a state title in 1915. And after that, he signed on with the Youngstown Patricians of the mythical Ohio League, you know, a semi-pro team, turning official as a player coach. And when the Patricians ceased operations due to World War I and the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918, the youngster started playing again, at first as a semi-pro with the Buffalo Niagaras, and then later with the Buffalo Prospects, and later in the APFA with the Buffalo All-Americans, the APFA, American Professional Football Association, the predecessor to the NFL for 2 years before they became and changed their name to the NFL. Now, he bounced around coaching and even doing some spot officiating gigs. Hewitt would later become an official in the All-American Football Conference, AAFC, and made quite an impression on some folks in that arena. Cleveland Browns great running back Marion Motley in the PFRA's Coffin Corner magazine was once quoted as saying to the historian Myron Cope, quote, "When Hewitt caught a guy stepping on us, he wouldn't mind telling him nothing. He'd just pick up the ball and start walking off 15 yards. They'd ask him why, and he'd say, for stepping on that man. The other referees saw that what this ref was doing, and they looked around and saw that we were bringing in the crowds as well as the white guys. So they started to protect us," end quote. Of course, he's talking in reference, Motley is, to being one of the first black players to take the field professionally after World War II, and the unfairness that they would receive from some of the players and, unfortunately, for some of the officials. Tommy Hewitt, though, despite the color of a player, set an example for others to follow to provide a safe, fair, and level playing field for all to play on. And, you know, it's really caught on. He really influenced the game by him doing that, just those small actions, and really helped the game and helped, you know, put racial tensions aside and made football a much better place for all to play. Another great official, we mentioned him a little bit earlier in his book, Big Bill Edwards, a star of Princeton in the 19th century. There's a story from the PFRA Coffin Corner magazine on him also, titled Blondie Wallace in the Biggest Football Scandal Ever, 1906. Where Edwards had been brought in from New York to officiate the first Canton-Maslin game of 1906. You remember, we've talked about this in many episodes, and you know, one with George Bozica, where you know Canton and Maslin, they really didn't like each other at the high school level. They didn't really like each other at the pro level either. We've also talked with author Greg Fasseri about this also. Now, reports state that there was never a doubt about who was in charge during that game in 1906, that first contest of Maslin and Canton. And at one point, Canton's player coach, Blondie Wallace, who is sort of nefarious in football circles. We've got a lot of stories of him being sort of that bad guy of football in the early 20th century. But he sent in a 215-pound substitute with a water bucket to relay information to the players on the field. That sounds harmless enough, except it was illegal back then in that era, as communication from the coach or anyone on the sideline, for that matter, violated the rules of the day. It also piqued the ire of the very impartial and fair Mr. Big Bill Edwards, too, as Big Bill grabbed the relaying substitute by the neck and threw him, quote, 10 yards across the sideline, water bucket, dipper, and all, unquote. Now, probably not a good move to do in today's game, but the move instilled the respect for the game official of both those rough and tumble teams from that 1906 game. And there are so many others stories of great gridiron celebs to be named as the game official. Even famed columnist Irv Kupinasset served as an official during Bears games in the 1940s while writing about the team for the Chicago Times. Maybe it was a slight conflict of interest, but hey, that's the way it was back in those days. They got who they could, and somebody knowledgeable in football as, a writer, he served as a referee in that game. Others, such as the University of Chicago star player George Barnwell, went from wearing pads to officiating, and he was a pretty good one too. And one of the biggest questions that comes up is a recent NFL official who is built like a battleship, Ed Hockley. Being in that good of shape for all those years, I think Ed officiated until he was almost 70 when he retired in 2017. He surely, being the muscular physique he had to have been a player once upon a time. Well, the fact is that he did play. He played a little bit of college football for 4 seasons at the University of Texas El Paso, or UTEP as more famously known today. And Hockley continued to work out, and he used his big guns that he developed to signal to the press box at NFL games for some 27 years, from 1991 to 2017. And he was known for speaking in everyday terms to explain the rulings from the field to the national audiences, and it really connected people with officiating instead of just having those signals and some, text rule book explanation of what the foul was. He really told you what was going on and why they called a foul and why it was a foul. And we appreciated that. He brought that whole new instance to, a little bit of empathy for the officials and some connection to the game that fans had not enjoyed before. So, those are just some of the more famous officials that, a lot of them were players before they officiated a game. And that's so important to keep that connection. And, it happened mostly in some older games of football. But, hey, you never know. You might get some of these players that are playing today that may want to become, join the squad of zebras that are out there. So anybody that is, I recommend it. It's a great experience. Contact your local, high school or youth organization. They can probably direct you to the local officiating crew in your area so you can be a part of the game and get out there with the youngsters and help them learn the game as you help learn the rules and, imply the rules and be an impartial person out on the field to keep a level playing field. So hope you enjoyed this little bit of history today. Hope you'll join us each and every day here on Pigskin Dispatch, where we bring football history and that portal to positive football history. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.